Welcome to the Coaching in Clubland podcast. My name is Mitch Johnston and I'll be your host. Coaching in Clubland is an Aussie podcast designed for current and aspiring coaches from all levels and across a range of sports to share their experiences about the caper. We discuss the roller coaster that is the coaching experience, the highs, the lows, the joys and the pitfalls. I caught the coaching bug as a teenager and have been fortunate enough to hold various coaching roles within cricket and footy clubs over the last 15 years. Through these experiences and my interactions as a player, I've come across many great and some not so great coaches in Clubland. We'll aim to keep things simple, practical and relatable so that you can apply these insights to your own coaching experiences. Sit back, grab a cuppa and please enjoy the episode. In this episode of Coaching in Clubland, we speak to Kaushal Silva. Kaushal played 39 test matches for Sri Lanka from 2011 to 2018 and made three test centuries, including one against Stark, Hazelwood, Lyon and Co. in 2016. A gritty and determined top-order batsman and more than capable wicketkeeper, Kaushal played 209 first-class games and made just shy of 14,000 runs. Kaushal had a brief stint with Dandenong in Victorian Premier Cricket in 2014-15 before coming back to Australia 5 years later to be the playing coach of the Greenvale Kangaroos. He's also recently launched a new cricket coaching program that focuses on the holistic development of young athletes. In our chat with Kaushal, we talk about the structure and challenges within Sri Lankan cricket, his time in the national team, and the club and individual coaching work that he's been up to in Australia. Welcome to the Coaching Clubland podcast, Kaushal Silva.
Thanks, buddy. Thank you very much.
Great to have you on, Kaushal. We have to start from probably a career highlight, I'd suggest. You made three test centuries, including one against Australia in 2016, who had Stark, Hazelwood and Lyon all featuring. What are your recollections of this game? And can you tell us about the story where you had six stitches in your hand as well?
I think if you read my centuries, obviously test and, you know, the first class, I would rate as the best ever. I reckon, obviously, because I had six stitches. And prior to that series, I won the man of the series against England and pretty much with well confidence going into that series. And the first two games didn't kind of go in the way that I wanted. But look, the third game, I was so much in pressure, you know, with Sri Lanka and media and all that. It's very tough. They expect you to score every game and you get put under pressure a lot. But obviously with six stitches on the webbing, it was a bit tough as well. And I had to rush back to the hospital. And then when I came back, the night watchman was gone and I had to face 5 overs. When Mitchell Stark was at his peak, he took about 20 odd wickets in that three test series in Sri Lanka. So he was at his peak. He was bowling really quick. But then I survived that 5 overs. And the most important thing I've learned through that was how I adapt myself with that finger injury and how I played with softer hands and let the ball come into me and start up scoring the areas which I normally don't score runs off. So I had to kind of adjust to my style of batting while the game was going on. So I think that was a key learning that I learned through that. You know, that was a fantastic innings and I'm truly proud of that innings.
And a pretty good test series win as well from memory. Was it three zip?
And that was the other important factor in that. And we wanted to, you know, we have never done it before in our history. That was like two tests and then this was the last one. And the second innings was very crucial. The wicket was turning a lot. It wasn't the easiest wicket to bat on. And we had to sort of get a good total on board for us to put pressure back on Aussies. And I thought that 100 was very crucial at that time. And the team needed my support. And I think I delivered that and we ended up winning the game. The most satisfaction was not only my 100, but then winning the game and also contributing myself to a winning note and also winning the series as well. So I think all in all, it was a fantastic series for all of us and especially a memorable innings for me.
You mentioned the selection pressure and the media pressure that often would come on the national team and players that might have gone through, you know, a few slumps in form. How did you deal with that, particularly in the post sort of Sangakkara and Jay Warner era where, you know, you had, I guess, Angelo Matthews and Chandamal as sort of the mainstays of the batting group, but there was a bit of rotation in the other spots. How did you deal with that pressure throughout your career?
Once you get to that level, it's pretty much every game, it's like tremendous pressure. And more importantly, not with the bat and ball, but with the outside pressure, with the media selection, because there's so much expectation. It's a cricket-loving nation and people want us to perform every game, which is understandable. So the expectations are quite high. But that for me was like, it's more of how I prove to myself rather than proving to anyone else. For me was always trying to improve the game and trying to challenge myself. And also I always had goals that I wanted to achieve. So I set myself sort of goals every series, so where I want to, end up getting into. So I try to achieve that. And those are not easy ones. It's always I want to raise the bar in every aspect of the game. It doesn't necessarily has to be batting only, but also fielding. It can be, leadership, it can be teamwork, whatever that it is. I always want to contribute to the team and make sure that the team wins. So, well, I didn't really worry about the outer environment too much. And if I worried too much, then it would have put me under too much pressure. So I just worried about my performance, what are the things that I can control? I just took it on.
And we'll shift the conversation to coaching, because your playing credentials are without question, no doubt, but you're also making waves as a coach as well. And I guess starting with the structure in Sri Lanka as well. So I happened to take a tour group in 2013 of young under 16 boys from the northwest suburbs of Melbourne. And one thing that was very apparent was how strong the school cricket system is in Sri Lanka as well. So can you tell us about your development as a player in this system and the type of coaching that you received?
School structure in Sri Lanka is fantastic. To be honest, that is kind of sort of the pathway that we have developed all these big names, Sangakkaras, Mahelas, De Silvas, Ranatungas, all of these guys. I think they came up through school structure. They got into the national team soon after they left school cricket. So the competition itself is very, very good in Sri Lanka. Obviously, I was blessed and fortunate enough to be represent in a school where they provided the sort of the infrastructure and the help from the school itself. And I was exposed to really good, talented cricketers. And from the school setup itself, I sort of learned a lot of skills. And also the coaches, they were so much high in skill level, and they kind of taught us the communications and also leadership skills and also the tactical technical side of the game. When we get into the national levels, we're pretty much all ready to go. It's not, there was not much of a gap in our school level when I was playing, but now it has slowly gone down a bit with different structures and, programs implementing it. But like my days, it was so, so good. And obviously previous years, it was much more higher in terms of like the gap wise. Every other cricketer was challenging and they were competing each other really, really high quality. And I must tell you, like the school games, there were play, back in the day, there were people coming to watch the games. So that was so competitive at that time.
And what about progressing to the first class structure then in Sri Lanka as well, and the quality of cricket, conditions and access to coaching? I know that there's a huge amount of first class teams in the country. Does that compromise the quality of cricket, do you think?
Well, it does. It does. To be honest, back in the day when I started, I left school in 2005. And in that time, there was about 10 to 12 maximum teams. 1 year it went down to 8 also. So the competition wise was really good. It was like playing with the cream. And again, I was fortunate to represent a team, a first class team where Mahela Jayawardena, Sangakkaran Samaravira, Avishka Gunawardena, and Nuwan Soyisa, all these big names, Amava Nathapattu, all of these big names played in that club. And I was able to share the dressing room with them, communicate the ideas and also the thought processes, game plans, tactics, all of that with them. So it was like amazing experience. And I kind of, got to bat with them. And, you can clearly see the difference. And I learned a lot while watching them bat and also playing with them in those times. And I thought that was a really good experience for me. In terms of the coaching structure was really, really good. I must tell you, it's more like a very structured manner. So we had sort of gym sessions. We had particular net sessions where we had turf wickets, and then we had bowling machine nets. So we had our own trainer. So it's pretty much the international level that every first class club has. It was a great experience, and I learned a lot through that when I was young.
And then making your way into the national setup there, you're playing under coaches like Paul Farbrace, Graham Ford, maybe Jeff Marsh for a short time there, and Chandika Hathrasinghe as well. How do you compare their approaches, and are there any traits or philosophies that you tried to embed in your own coaching approach?
I think Jeff was, I still remember the time that he spent was maybe 1 or 2 months, if I'm not mistaken. And I toured with him to South Africa as a rookie, and I didn't get to play in that series. But I still remember he used to spend more time with the juniors, and he used to take me and some of the other juniors for an early run and just have a coffee with the players and to feel that you are part of the team, even though you're not playing, right? So he treated everyone equally. So that was the biggest thing that I learned from him. And as a coach, you need to sort of, in a team environment, especially when you're coaching a national team, there are superstars in your team, right? So, but he never treat anyone as a superstar. He treat everyone equally. So that was a really, really big message, the sort of a key thing, because I never expected from him to approach to me and some of the youngers, right? To, you know, come and just mingle around with him, communicate with him, get that, you know, get going with him. So that was a key thing that I sort of learned from him. And Paul Farbrace was another really good coach. He was a great wicketkeeper. His hand-eye drills was fantastic. And I learned a lot, especially against pace bowling, how he sort of move around and how he sort of rotate the hips and all of that part. I learned a lot from him. And Graham Ford, I think he was a guy who are looking for like character in the team. And I'm out of the like guys like Angelo, Chandimal, Mahela, Sangakkara. Probably I'm not skillfully similar to them. I'm more less skillful, but I do have the character. I mean, I'm happy to go and get the ball hit on my dad body and take the more new ball away for the next guys to make it easier for them to bat. I always get the hard stuff done. Graham was like so much helped me and pushed me and also supported me, because he knew that I am the guy who do the bad stuff, in the sense like the hard stuff, and he always backed me up and he always guided me to push my character and willpower and resilience. And I can remember one game against England. We got all out for 80 in the first innings in Durham. And then the next inning, before the next innings, myself, Dimuth Karunaratne was opening and Sangha and Mahela was batting at number 3 and 4. So he asked all four of us to come in the morning, hour early before the start of the play. And he gave 2 new balls to the sidearm thrower. He normally throws with the arm, and then he asked him to take the sidearm. So with the arm itself, he's so fast. Yeah. He's like, his name is Nuan. He's so fast. Now he's working with the Indian cricket team. So they have got him just as a thrower only. The Indian cricket team has got special thrower only, right? Because he's so good and so quick. Graham gave him the sidearm and he was all over the place, man. And this wicket was so damp. And the ball just bumps all over the place, right? And I think, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of the guys just said, they can't play. They can't bat in this track, right? So then what happened is I said, no, I'm going to challenge, okay? If he's going to put me into challenge, I'm going to challenge, right? I'm going to challenge back. So then I never said it. I just faced that. And then, mate, when I went and faced Jimmy and Stuart Broad, I felt like, what is this? why I got myself out in the first innings, because, you know, this is like nothing. Because he actually taught me, if you go through hard times in training sessions, when you go to competition with pressure, you can adapt to whatever the condition. So he used us to train harder at training. So even though it was in a match, right, he made us to do that. And we ended up getting 300 runs. And I got about 70 odd in that and laid the platform for the players. So I think in his philosophy, it was more hard training and get the character out of from yourself. So I think those coaches, those are the key learnings that I learned through the journey.
And certainly making training harder in the game, I think, is a classic coaching tool that can really draw a lot out of your players. What about Chandika Hathorasinghe? He's done quite well. He's obviously coached Bangladesh as well and has done some good stuff in New South Wales. Have you followed his journey closely?
Oh, well, yeah. He was an instrumental coach when I was playing in the A-team cricket. He was actually the one who kind of got my sort of batting skills into sort of the next level in terms of like thinking-wise, the mindset-wise. Because when I got dropped after the first three games, I actually went to Sydney to see him. And we kind of sat down, you know, because I was really doing well in the first-class cricket. But when I got the opportunity in the national level, there's so much expectations, right? You want to do well, and then obviously too much expectation doesn't go well. I didn't do well, then I got dropped. Then I was in this gray area where I felt like, you know, what I'm going to do, right? I've done all this hard work. Now I've got an opportunity and now I've left aside. So he actually planned me to, you know, restructure my career. So he set me some goals. He gave me some sort of targets. We changed a bit of thinking pattern because I always didn't want to change things. He was the one who implemented, because if you do a change only, you can be a different player, right? You can't be a different player doing the same sort of things. So you've got to start thinking differently. Yep. So he was the one who got me into planning ahead, goal setting and in a structural way, right? And also he taught me how I think about my game. And winning is not the, or winning or scoring hundreds is not the only thing. Being happy in the moment and start enjoying yourself. Those are the key things he sort of taught me.
No, we have to enjoy what we do. It is only a game at the end of the day, and that's perspective is very important. Speaking of perspective, there's a lot of politics in Sri Lankan cricket. I mean, there was a pay dispute recently. There seems to be, you know, a revolving door around government officials maybe getting involved in selection at times. Is this a bit of a handbrake for the national team? Does it affect the team playing to their full potential, do you think?
For a certain extent, I would believe. But look, you know, we as a team, we try to not to overthink too much because at the end of the day, it's not our control, right? So we try to stick to what we can control. Obviously, sometimes when you build up a team, it's difficult, right? When you have sort of a player who wants to sort of invest that player for a certain period, and if a political involvement comes in and or some other big factor comes in and stop doing that, it sort of stops the whole plan and the growth plan and the development plan of the team. But end of the day, there are things that you can control. There are things that you can't control, right? So we try to more focus on the things that we can control. And whatever the team that we got, we were more focused on winning games and try to win games for our country and try to be the best cricketers that we can be for our country. So that was sort of our mindset where we were at that time. And I'm sure now our cricketers are the same. They must be thinking the same way, because more you start to think about the non-controllables, it's very tough to manage your game.
And during the midst of your test career, you played a few games with the Dandenong Cricket Club in Victorian Premier Cricket in 2014-15. What were your first impressions of Australian club cricket, and how did the standard compare to first-class cricket in Sri Lanka?
Well, the standards were really good, I must tell you, because when I played for Dandenong, Peter Siddle and James Pattinson was playing, and both of them played two games with me.
Right.
And that was a really, really cool experience. Both of them are good mates of me. James, of course, is a really good guy. We've been really good friends. So it was a great experience, and I must thank Dandenong Cricket Club for giving me that opportunity at that time, because I was on a tour to New Zealand, and I think on the way back I played three games for them, and for me it was getting that experience in the Australian soil, and also that was the first experience for me playing out of the country in a club level or a, you know, state level itself. So it was a really cool experience, and the boys treated me really well. And up to now, they're really good friends with me, most of them. So I think I really enjoyed that three games.
And a very strong club as well, Dan. You know, I mean, they featured in the grand final in the recent 2020-21 season as well. So I've always been one of the benchmark clubs in the competition. And you were the playing coach of Greenvale Kangaroos in 2019-20 after your test career had finished. Can you reflect on your time as coach at the club and some of the challenges that a premier coach has?
That was a blessed for me. Happened without really thinking about it, the coaching side of it. I was planning to come to Melbourne, and obviously Greenwell approached me, and they wanted me to be the head coach of them as well. And then I was like, okay, this is going to be a really good experience. While I was doing that, I went and did the level 3 coaching as well, which kind of gave me sort of what I learned through my career and how I execute that as a coach. So it was a great course that I participated while I was as the head coach at Greenwell. Obviously, the club cricket culture is probably a bit different to Sri Lankan culture in here. So I sort of had to figure it out in terms of mindset wise, how I, you know, approach these guys, because back home in Sri Lanka, we are so structured in terms of club cricket, because that was the first class cricket for us back home. But here the club cricket is not the first class cricket. It's the level below first class cricket. But the structure wise, like obviously Greenville had immense facilities. They had 3 to 4 grounds. Their turf facilities was unbelievable. Their training structure was really cool, and everything else was quite similar to what club cricket in back home had. I would say in terms of the coaching support staff wise, we were a bit lacking, because we didn't have a specific trainer, or the people had to come back from work and it was tough for them to sort of give their 100% at training. Some of them misses out training sessions so that they wouldn't be able to get the best out of the match. For me as a coach, I really, really value the fact that fitness is very essential. And as a kid, I laid the foundation at school cricket, and I was probably one of the fittest in the school structure in under 19 to under 17 level. And I felt that foundation was really helpful for me to get those big hundreds, you know, spend time on the field. And if you don't have that, it's very tough to also concentrate. That is one thing. And also being aware of situations, right? So if you are not aware of any situation, it's very tough to get your skills going, right? Because see, if you feel for 70-80 overs, and if you get to bat in a 2-day game, you've got to be focused as an opener to go back onto field and play those 10 or maybe 5-10 overs in a game. And you know, 98 overs in a game for a day in district cricket, it's a lot of overs. And you as a player, you need to understand, you got to get your fitness done. You got to work on your... And that doesn't happen just prior to the season. You got to work that during off-season. You got to work on your skill level. And I don't know whether the rest of the other clubs are doing this, but Greenwell, of course, didn't have that. And I, of course, just got in just prior to the season. And I didn't do any... off-season or pre-season work with them. So I kind of didn't know where they were standing at that time. But like, you know, moving forward, I felt like they need a structural program, especially Greenwald, because they wanted to, like, you know, for them to improve, like, you know, especially the off season where I feel like the growth happens, they need to really think that and start focusing on their strengths and weaknesses and, you know, create a structural plan where they can improve their fitness. I think as facility wise, majority of the clubs has like a lot of grounds. The back home in Sri Lanka, we just have one ground, mate. So, and we, I mean, we don't hardly have indoor nets facilities or any other, you know, facilities that, you guys have here. But for me, I think that is number one. Facilities is very important. On top of that, if you can create sort of a structure, I think, you know, it'll be really cool.
No, they've certainly got the facilities there and some hardworking people, Bruce Kent and Pranish Singh and Lee Elbs and one or two others that really keep the club, you know, afloat. It's just hopefully that, you know, the performances on field start to turn around as well. But you've recently developed a holistic coaching model that you and I have spoken about, which sounds very exciting. And that's come about the last few months, that supports the all-round development of young cricketers. You're still sort of refining that model, but can you talk us through some of the key components of this model and the fundamentals that you like to reinforce with young cricketers that are learning the game?
I have had this conversation with you and I think for me is skill is something that anyone can develop, right? See, if I ask you to bat and for a 1 hour, you might ended up hitting 100 balls. And if you do that for 7 days, you might, you know, ended up 700 shots. And if you do that for one particular shot for 1 month, you will end up over 2,800 shots. So it's, you know, repetition wise, if you do that correctly, you can, you know, get to a certain level. But the biggest challenge and what I learned through my career is that when to use that shot, right? When you're struggling, how are you going to overcome a situation? When you're feeling down, how are you going to motivate yourself, right? When you get to bowl the last over, when your team can't give more than 2 runs for the over, how are you going to stop the other opposition team doing that? And when you have 6 runs for an over that you need to do it for 20 overs, how are you going to do that? So how are you going to make your mind focusing on what you need to do? So those are the things I think is my coaching philosophy is all about. And be aware of the situation and how to execute those skills that you got. And also fitness, because there's 3 different stages in my coaching program, which covers the fitness side of it. And then which is the athletic program. And also there's a mindset side of it, which covers the mindset and also the skill level, which obviously, you know, the technical, tactical, all that part covers. So it's a holistic program which covers everything. And also on top of that, I'm a firm believer of nutrition and also the recovery side of it. So if you don't recover yourself, because your body doesn't know what sort of program that you're going in, right? So you got to give that recovery, that stretches or the rehab exercises or your monthly screenings. It can be, you know, your diet, your proper sleep, your hydration, you know, that all needs to come for you to become the best athlete, right? If you talk to all these international players, they have sort of got into those routines at the early stage of their career. And for me, when I came here, I felt, you know, the resources are there. Obviously, the guidance maybe is not the 100% for these kids. And also, I felt there wasn't a structural program where they all can, you know, go through with. So what I did was I sort of, you know, used what I've learned through the past maybe 15 years of my experience and also the coaching that I had, the course that I had at the level 3, I sort of structured the program where I could include everything so that a kid who comes onto my program can sort of learn all those aspects and get to a better cricketer, a better person if he doesn't end up as a better cricketer. So it's not only about your teaching the skills here, it's all about your teaching the life skills as well. So there'll be programs where I'm trying to have leadership programs into these program. And also I want to build up the team culture, which is something I think some of the, like when you do individual coaching, it's pretty hard to do it, right? Because you don't get the kids to get along together too much. But in here, when you get them together and start giving them tasks and activities to do together, so they will get along well. And also competition-wise, you try to compete each other and try to get better and better at it. So that is where you sort of kind of thinking the other aspects where you can build up as a personality of these kids as well. So it's a whole holistic program. I'm so excited and hopefully launch it early next year.
That sounds very comprehensive. I know there's a lot of private coaches out there on coaching programs that perhaps they might do the skills and the nutrition aspect or the leadership and the skills, whether they can hit all those areas as consistently, probably, you know, the jury might be out. So I think this program could be a real game changer. And we'll keep our eyes peeled when it does come out officially. But I think you've got a fantastic concept there. Cowshaw, it's been fantastic having you on. Your test career, 39 test matches, 3 centuries, making a ton against Stark Hazelwood line with one hand. Not bad at all, mate. And your coaching pedigree is fantastic. You're making a really big impact in Australia, mate. So wonderful to have you on the podcast. Good luck this season, wherever you may land. We'll keep an eye on how you go. And thanks again. Take care.
Thanks, Mitch. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. And I hope all the very best for you going this journey and your coaching journey as well. And I look forward to support you in whatever way, and all the very best for your career, man.
Thanks, Cashel. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers, buddy.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Coaching in Clubland. A shout out to the talented Aidan Arandes for putting together our podcast theme song. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to hear more, subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcast. Feel free to leave a rating and review. To catch the latest updates from the podcast, check us out on Facebook or on Twitter at Coaching Club Pod. Thanks again, and catch you around in Clubland.